Hi, this is Tom Robbins.
And Jennifer Nichols.
And today we're talking about how we are dealing with grief. Thanks for being with us. Stick with us. Hey, thanks for joining us today. This is Tom and Jen. We're here talking about grief. Obviously, you guys have listened to a few of these, or at least I hope you have. I lost my little brother in 2019, and Jennifer lost her husband last year, right?
Yep, February 2020. Lost my sister-in-law in December of 2019, and my mother-in-law in August of 2019.
So as you can see, most of us have dealt with a lot of loss. It's pretty intense, usually. So where would you like to start, Jennifer?
I don't know where to start.
Which loss do you feel affects you the most? The husband?
The husband, for sure.
So Eddie, yeah? Okay. Yep. So tell me about where you met him.
My best friend introduced us. I had been divorced for about a year. And, well, almost divorced. We had paperwork we had to take care of. For about a year when I met him, she invited us both over to her house for dinner. He worked with her husband at the time. She'd been my best friend for many, many years. And we just went from there. It took a while because he was very hesitant because my divorce was not final yet. But that was a money matter, not a emotion issue.
Sure.
It was just paperwork, so.
Yeah. Good old paperwork.
Good old bankruptcy paperwork.
The paperwork always seems to get, I think it seems to get all of us. We had a little power thing. It was weird.
It was weird. I don't even know what happened there.
I don't know, but then the lights flicker. Here we are talking about
this. We are talking about dead people. Hi, Eddie. hey, honey. How you doing?
We're good, dude. I swear. We're just chilling. I'm starving right now. I know. I could have went and got food, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, how long were you and Eddie together?
We were together for 25 years. We were married for 23.
Holy shit.
Yeah, right?
We're going to cuss, just an FYI.
Yeah, I've completely lost my filter. So if any of my family happens to listen to this and hears me drop the F-bomb a million times, you've already heard it live in person, so.
So deal with it.
Sorry, not sorry.
Wow. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's happening, Tom?
Oh, no, I'm having some weird like power thing going on over here. I don't know what's going on.
I'm not hearing that.
Not at all, huh?
No.
Okay.
That's odd.
Yeah, that's really, like, odd. I don't see any, like, I hear it, but do you hear it at all?
No, I don't think I do.
Okay. Oh, I don't know. All right, well, we'll just have to listen to this back and see what it sounds like. Oh, train wreck, hello.
Hello, train wreck.
Welcome to my life. oh, God. I'm missing my water. So 23 years married, 25 together, that's huge.
It is.
Especially in these days and ages. People think you brushed your hair the wrong way. I'm getting divorced.
I can't deal with that shit. That's so stupid.
I know. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. You know, relationships are difficult, and you just have to make up your mind. You know, you're saying something, unless there's some major something.
Yeah.
That doesn't jive with your personal beliefs.
So we're gonna like jump into. We're going to dive deep.
Oh, God.
Yes. So the first question I'm going to ask you, maybe second question.
Whatever. I'm not counting.
The next question I'm going to ask you is, tell me about that when Eddie passed. Like, tell me the story. What, when did he first get sick?
Okay, that's a little bit of a long story.
That's why we're here.
I'll try to tell it. Because I think, oh, I'll start here, and then I have to think, no, I got to back up to make it make sense. Family history on his mother and father's side, they all have bad hearts. They're all type 2 diabetics, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We found out in 2002, I think, that Eddie was type 2 diabetic. And he did pretty good taking care of himself sometimes, most of the time, sometimes not. We were self-employed then also. Didn't have any health insurance, so navigating all of that. That was before the Affordable Care Act. Anyway, we can't go there. We did pretty good with that for a few years. We ended up closing our store, and he went to work for a big pawn shop up in Indy, a big corporation out of Texas. And then we had insurance. He sometimes did what he was supposed to and sometimes did not.
Like most of us.
Like most of us do. Like we all do. So he was type 2 diabetic for... he was probably before that, but that we knew of since about, I can't remember exactly when it was, 2001, 2002, something like that. So anyway.
I know, it's not going to be easy.
I'm trying to think where I'm going with this to make it make sense. So, type 2 diabetic, grief, as we both know now, is a terrible thing. Sometimes it's hard. I won't say terrible. Hard. It's terribly hard.
Yeah. It's very often.
Before his mom died, I have to throw this in because it may have some bearing on this at the end. So in 2018, my children's father died. He and I, after we got divorced, after we separated and divorced, I struggled with... I didn't deal with that because also divorce is also a source of grief.
Yeah.
I didn't stop and deal with it. I was angry. I was mad. I didn't want to be divorced, but I also didn't want to stay with him because he enjoyed pursuing other women. And I'm not speaking badly about him. It's just that's who he was.
Yeah.
And that was not something I was willing to deal with. So... anyway, I didn't deal with those emotions. I put them in a box and set them aside and went forward and took care of my kids and went to work and did all the things you have to do to live.
Sure.
So when he died, very unexpectedly, it brought up all of that with me. And Eddie knew it. And I didn't even really want to talk with him about it because that's my husband. I love him. He loves me. I don't want to... bring up all this past.
Don't want to burden him with your ex. And
well, it wasn't that I didn't want to burden him. It was that I felt like it was just stuff I had to deal with myself.
Yeah.
And he knew it, and he was supportive of that. I found a therapist. We talked, went in a few sessions. I think I dealt with all that. I'm not at this point pretty sure I got that all dealt with. So when Eddie's mom died in August of 19... That's the wrong year. I'm so sorry. Why did I say 19? Okay, here we go. Hello, grief.
Oh, take a deep breath. Okay.
Hello, grief. That is totally wrong. I totally told that wrong earlier.
It's all right.
Jeez.
Deep breath. Back on task.
Eddie's mom died in August of 2015.
Okay.
Not 19.
Okay.
So, he was sad. He was busy. He was working. He had had to go back and forth to Florida several times. She'd been in and out of the hospital. And his sister, his youngest sister, was also sick. And we knew she was sick. And she was in the middle of battling pancreatic cancer. And we were hoping that she would win that. She was tough as nails. And we thought, you know, if anybody can beat that, she can beat it.
Yeah.
So he'd spent the summer back and forth trying to work in Florida. He had also just, In May, we spent the whole summer just crazy traveling and stuff. We had just bought our house in 2014. His dad was the sheriff of Washington County, and he had been murdered in 1983. And,
small town America.
It's a mess. I did not know his dad. I had just moved to that county in 1984. I did not. That's wrong. He was murdered in 1984. I'm so sorry. Anyway, I moved there in 84, but I did not know him or his dad. Anyway, he had pursued and gotten his father's name engraved on the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C., and we had been to the ceremony for that, and it was amazingly, horrifically beautiful. I can't describe that. You have to go to that sometime. If you're in law enforcement, I know you know what I'm talking about. It was just amazing. It was, I think, the last one they did at the memorial, because it's gotten so big they've had to move it, and then COVID messed everything up. And
Good old COVID.
Anyway, so he had gotten that done. Then he had to go to Florida, back and forth with his mom. So when his mom died, he drove down and got his sister, or he had flown down. He drove the sisters back here for the services and all that. Then he drove them home, because Lainey couldn't fly because she was so sick. And we tried to get his sisters to move up with us, and they said they'd talk about it, and they decided not to because we couldn't keep going back and forth.
Yeah.
Because money and work, you can't just be completely absent. So
you can, it doesn't take you very far. I know some days I'm completely absent. Like, people look at me and they're like, what are you on? I'm like, I'm not on nothing, man.
Oh, stop talking.
Like, I'm a blank slate on my face. You know?
Pull a blank.
Yeah.
So he didn't stop to grieve for his mom. And then we were still so hoping that Lainey was going to beat the cancer. But we also knew that that was probably not going to be the case. Then she had went in the hospital, so back to Florida he went. And then I followed a day or two after. And we were there with her in her hospital room. She was on comfort medications. And they had also decided, yes, they would move up to Indiana with us right before she landed in the hospital. So that had already been set in motion, that they had to get out of the house they were in. It was a rental. And they were in the process of trying to sort through personal belongings and yard sale some things and all of that. So we went down. It was over Thanksgiving somehow. I forgot about that. Anyway, where was it? No, it wasn't. It was right after Thanksgiving. It was right around Thanksgiving. So I think that was the last actual meal she ate. Thanksgiving meal. My sister-in-law, that is alive, could tell us. I cannot remember. Anyway, so we were in the hospital room with her day and night. Except for one, some of us were at the house trying to pack because they had to be out by a certain date. And she was out of it. Like, they had her on some pretty heavy medications, and honestly thought she had like 2 days when we went down there, and it was at least a week. I can't remember how many days. I don't know.
Sure.
It was several. It was not 2 days. So she waited until we were all out of the room, except for a favorite aunt. And then she died while we were trying to load up the truck. So anyway,
that's a tough, that's a...
We weren't surprised she waited for us to all be gone.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want us to have to be there for
that. Well, it sounded like everyone was pretty close, right? And I think, I mean, I would hope that, you know, in that situation, I'll be honest, I don't want a bunch of people around me when I go. I kind of want to be alone so no one has to see me go through whatever I go through to...
Yeah, well, I mean, they had her medicated enough, she didn't, there was no, like, sure. There was no big scene, it was just, yeah. she was already basically asleep.
Yeah.
And she just... I wasn't there. I don't know.
Yeah. How long did she battle cancer for?
She had that. I think I figured it out once, and I can't remember exactly. She was had a lot of pancreatitis before they finally diagnosed her pancreatic cancer. But from the diagnosis till she died was somewhere, I can't remember exactly, between 18 to 20 months.
Okay.
And she went from a regular person. She was going to university. She was getting her counselor's degree. You know, you look at her, she's great, healthy, fine. She didn't weigh 90 pounds when she died.
Yeah.
She was skin and bones. It was hard to watch. It was really hard. And yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of it because she's in Florida, not Indiana. So.
Well, it's like seeing photographs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's where she is. Oh, and now she lost 50 pounds. And oh my gosh. And now she's nothing. And
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty intense. You know, you just... Because it's not a slow progression. It's like, and that's quick, right? Not even 2 years from diagnosis.
But honestly, for pancreatic cancer, my understanding of that was a long time for her to live.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about cancer other than I don't want it.
I don't want it either. Usually pancreatic cancer, I think, I don't know. I don't know the details. It's much faster than that.
Yeah.
For most people. It's the hardest one to figure out that's what it is. It's very, very painful. There was a lot of weed involved there. I hope nobody judges for that. I honestly think that's why she lived as long as she did.
Whatever, let them judge.
Well, they can step off.
Yeah, anyway.
Anyway.
So you guys dealt with that, right?
Dealt with that. So then my other sister-in-law moved in with us. And we all three lived there. Eddie, all of a sudden, I kept saying, honey, you need to talk to somebody. You obviously are not okay. No,
yeah.
I'm fine. No, I'm fine. No, I'm fine. He was not fine. Because of grief. And I also have had that experience. No, I'm not fine. I'm not okay. And I don't know when I'm going to be okay, but here I am.
Yeah.
So he ended up not working for some period of time, and then when he went back to work, he tried to go back to work a couple different times. It didn't work out. I had the same experience. I am back to work now, and it is working out, and everything's fine with that. But
hoorah!
Hoorah! He couldn't work. Well, he was 59, and just barely 60 when he died. Right before Thanksgiving in 2019, he'd been out he loved to competitively shoot guns. They're called turkey shoots. You're not shooting a turkey, you're shooting a target. A certain kind of shotgun, they're really cool looking.
See, turkey shooting, I'm thinking, man, I love turkey.
No turkeys there.
Man.
I mean, if you went to a meat shoot, they might have had a turkey, you could win.
Yeah.
Although usually it was a ribs or bacon or a ham or something like that, or hamburger, like good stuff. But anyway, so he went to a shoot. It was right before Thanksgiving. It wasn't all night, but it wasn't unusual for him to get home at 2 a.m. Like, that's normal.
Yeah.
And so he got home, and usually he can lay down and go to sleep, and he couldn't get settled down, and he was complaining his stomach hurt, and back and forth to the bathroom, and finally about 7:30 in the morning after I fussed at him a few times, I'm like, come on, you need to go figure out what's wrong. We're thinking food poisoning, because he's like, yeah, I ate some of that deer jerky, but it wasn't any good.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's, or summer sausage or something.
Yeah.
So we went to our local ER and happened to know the nurse, and after she got to looking at him, I could tell it wasn't that, it was something else.
Yeah.
So he was having a heart attack, or had, or I think he was in the middle of that. It's not like they show it on TV. I can't even watch these medical shows. Like, I can barely watch TV at all anymore anyway, but
yeah.
The few hospital shows that I've tried to, or, so, you know, it's nothing like
they're,
that.
They're big and dramatic and, oh my God. Always, you know, when someone says heart attack, I always think of Fred Sanford.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's nothing like that.
Elizabeth, I'm coming for you.
Coming for you. Anyway, it was bad in a different way. He was in so much pain. He couldn't be still, and I'm sure he was completely out of his head. Like, he doesn't remember any of this. But I was literally having, it was before COVID. So we didn't have to deal with that at that point. It was flu season, is what they were telling us. Flu season, everybody needs to wear a mask. If you're sick, you don't need to be here, all this stuff, right? So I literally had to wrestle him to try to keep him in the bed. And it was very disconcerting, to say the least. I was like, and if I had walked out of that room, I don't know what would have happened, because there was nobody else in there.
Right.
Like, how, anyway, so.
No, how what?
How, and I know the nurse, you know, small hospital, I know she was doing what she could do, and thank God that she finally got a hold of a, she was trying to get us transferred, or get him transferred to Floyd County, and they kept telling her no, they didn't have any
beds,
and they didn't have any transportation. And I finally looked at her. The doctor was in and out a couple times, and she wouldn't even get anywhere close to him, because she said, oh, I'm sick, I don't want to get anywhere close to him, I'm over here, I got all the information. Yeah, right, they did all these tests, heart attack, okay, fine. The nurse thankfully called her cardiologist and said, hey, we got the situation, he needs down there now. So before she started an IV, I said her name, and I said, do I need to put him in the car and take him down there myself right now? Because I'm not waiting any longer. I'm done waiting. She said, no, that's probably not a good idea. I don't know if you'll make it. I was like.
So reality just like hit, like, oh shit.
I was like, okay. All right. So they got him down there in an ambulance. I remember making a couple of phone calls. I stopped at my house to take care of my dog, I think, maybe. No, my sister-in-law, no, wait. See, it's gone. Like, I don't remember exactly.
Well, so one of the things.
I remember being on the phone with a dear friend and coach. A couple other people, and then I was trying to tell my kids, and I called my sister, and she was getting ready to leave on vacation, and she was trying to decide if she was gonna stay or go. She ended up staying. Anyway, by the time I got down to Floyd County, they took him in the ambulance. They would not let me go with him. They had him in the cath lab. They took him straight into the cath. They didn't take him in the ER. They took him straight to the cath lab. And by the time I got down there, they were already done with the heart cath. And the doctor, I got there and I was waiting in the little waiting area. And one of the nurses, somebody, came and got me and said, here, come back here and sit and wait in this office for a minute. So I'm back in the back where the employees are, not where people get to go.
Right.
Sitting in a room for about a minute and a half, and the doctor came and got me. I said, come with me, I want you to see this. And he took me back to the console area where all the computer screens are lined up.
Where he did the cath and ran his camera.
And he showed me the video of the heart cath.
Yeah.
And he was explaining it to me. And I know nothing about it. I mean, I know we all have a heart.
Right.
And I know that it pumps. And I know there's some
stuff in
there, like veins and yeah. You know, because your blood has to go in, it has to come out, and if you have a blockage, then, you know, that's a little bit of a problem, and usually they can fix that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he shows me these films, and he shows them to me, and he's talking with me, and he said, I remember him saying, so you can see all of his main arteries are blocked completely, and I can see all these little, I call them collateral arteries that your heart will make. When you have blocked, when your main arteries are blocked, your heart, and I knew this would happen, could happen, because his mom, this had happened with his mom back in the 90s when she first got sick.
I had no idea that happens.
Your heart will make collateral arteries. Unfortunately, most of the time they're not large enough to sustain the blood flow that you need. So that's when you start getting tired, and stuff, right? So he showed me all this. He showed me where the ones were blocked. He said, this one, I think it's only 99% blocked. The other two are 100% blocked. You have three main arteries, I think. And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but this is what I remember. You have three main arteries. Two are 100% blocked. One is 99% blocked. Here's all of his collateral arteries. There were dozens of collateral arteries. They had all twisted up at the ends, and they were all blocked.
Oh, Lord.
None of them were big enough
for anything
to sustain the blood flow anymore.
Yeah.
He said, I can't help your husband. You need to take him up to IU Methodist. I know a doctor up there. And I said, what? So I went from everyday life in 2019, which was not totally typical, because, as you know, being a realtor, life is never, you work.
You don't know. Yeah.
You don't know. You never know what a day is going to bring, and you're flexible like that. But I was, you know, working. He had, like I said, Eddie had tried to go back to work a few times, and he did find a job that he really loved. He was driving a medical transport van, but he'd gotten hurt at work. In February, March, April, I don't remember, before this, and he had to be off work. He ripped his rotator cuff in his shoulder, he couldn't push a wheelchair, so he was off work. So I was working a lot, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
To keep things where we needed to be. And so I went from everyday life to, I can't help your husband. You need to take him up to Indy. And I was like, okay.
Talk about kicking the nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just knocked the...
So...
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So, he stayed all night at Floyd's. They had... when he was on they installed a aortic balloon pump. When they do that, you have to lay flat. You can be inclined a little bit, but you can't like sit up. You can't bend at your hips because
they go in
through the groin, and it's an aortic balloon pump. It's in your aorta.
Yeah.
If you sit up, you'll rip your aorta open and you'll bleed out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was explained to me. If I'm wrong, all you medical people, I'm sorry. That's my understanding. That's my recollection of how that worked.
We are not medical professionals.
We are not. Although I did get a fast education on heart stuff. A little bit, a teeny tiny bit. So he stayed all night at Floyd. There was a nurse with him the whole time, like they've never left the room. There's always somebody with him in the room. I can't remember if I stayed in the room or if I had to stay in the, I don't think they let me stay. I think I had to stay in the waiting room. I don't remember. One of my kids, my doll, my oldest daughter was there, and my son-in-law, and or my, he, yeah. Anyway, and my sister-in-law, of course, was there. So they were talking about whether to fly him up to Indy or take him in an ambulance. And they didn't want to send him right then. They wanted to wait and make sure they stabilized a little bit before they tried to transport him. So then the doctor came back and talked to me again. He said, yeah, he needs to get on the heart transplant list. And I went, what?
Yeah.
What? How did we go from?
Everything's good.
Everything. Oh, I mean, you know, I don't want to say it was good, but it was okay. Like, so far as, like, he was tired a lot, but
it wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. He was tired. He got tired easy, but, you know, he was injured. He's almost 60. I don't know. Anyway, so then he started going over some questions about that. And, you know, if you smoke or chew tobacco, if you're a type 2 diabetic, and a few other things, it kind of takes you off the list. If your diabetes isn't under control and you're using nicotine of any kind.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. It's where he needs to go. Okay. Let's go. So they transported him up there, and I want to say they finally landed on an ambulance because I think maybe the weather was bad, or they decided that was a better way to go. I don't know. I don't remember. It was not a helicopter though. I don't remember why they decided ambulance. Anyway, ambulance. So my sister-in-law and I drove up too. So in the meantime, my sister-in-law canceled her vacation, was at the hospital with me. I'm trying to deal with, I have, thank God, friends at home that were dealing with my dog and my sister-in-law's dog and all of that. My best friend, Jamie, that introduced us, ended up Molly, but my dog, Molly dog, went and stayed with her this whole time, I think.
Good friend.
Oh my gosh, such a good friend. I don't know what I would have done. So
I think often we don't really think about all the details that go into, you know, everything around, yeah, right? Like what we do in everyday life.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And we're just like, okay, cool, we can just do this, and yeah, it's not. It's a lot of management.
It is. It's a lot of, and I can't remember where. I don't remember what Annette did with her dog.
Someone took care of him. Okay.
Somehow. So I think maybe both, no, event, well, no, that was, I don't know.
It's all right. So you guys went up to Indy.
So we went up to Indy. They, they had given him, so part of that wrestling match I mentioned in the ER at the first hospital started when they gave him a certain drug that was supposed to calm him down.
Had an adverse effect on him?
Had an adverse effect. And I, right this minute, I'm not coming up with the name of that drug, but the whole time I'm like, you cannot give him that. That does not calm him down. Did you not see me wrestling with him?
Right.
He will not stay in bed. He will not, does not calm him down. Like, he had the opposite reaction to those types of medications. So they gave him more of that. When we got up to Indy, trying to keep him calm, well, it wasn't working, and I kept saying, please give him something else. This is not working. Like, and then he was hallucinating, and
so like morphine or something.
No, Ativan.
Okay.
Ativan?
Could be.
I think it was Ativan. Was hallucinating. We were there for several days. He could not answer the questions properly. What RU-oriented, like, to make his own health decisions, so I was having to make them. So one of the cardiologists, the surgeon, came in and said, so, because they had, I met so many doctors. There's three different types of heart doctors teams that came through there, and it's a teaching hospital, so then you have all of the other extra people and all of that. So Annette was making notes every time people rounded, and we were, so there was a lot of information and a lot of discussion, and we're gonna have a meeting, he's gonna be on our list on the meeting today, and we're gonna talk about what we're gonna do. And then we had a problem, like when we first got there, we couldn't get the films from the hospital here to there, not the films, the cath films. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how
is it that hard?
How is this hard?
Yeah.
So thankfully my daughter was still down here. I said, and I, then that first day I called her, I said, go over to the cath lab and pick up the disc and bring it before you come up here. And I had to get with the cath lab, and I said, I need this information. The doctors need it. They requested it through the way it's supposed to come, and it's not working because y'all systems won't talk to each other. I just need it. Give it to me. I don't know if somebody broke some rules making that happen, but they made it happen. My daughter picked it up and brought it up, and then they had it so they could review that before they decided what to do. So,
if you had to break rules, thank you.
I didn't like that. Anyway, I mean, it doesn't make sense. Why are we waiting on this thing that, are we not in the 21st century here?
So with the downside with bureaucracy is there are rules for rules for rules for rules, and you've got to ask permission from 72 different people.
I don't
have anything to do with it.
Well, anyway, I'm not so much sure. The biggest part of the problem was the technology. They wouldn't talk to each other. Their systems wouldn't converse. Oh, well, we sent it. Well, we don't have it, and we need it.
Yeah.
And we needed it yesterday, and they were supposed to send it with him, and somehow, and you know, it's very chaotic when you're moving somebody that's attached to that much equipment. Like, it is horrific. It takes 8 people to move somebody 2 feet, okay? So, like, I understand, you know, stuff, these things happen. So, anyway, so we got the disc, got it up there. One of the surgeons said, okay, so here's what I want to do. I don't really know if I can, but here's what you need to know. Time is of the essence. I think I can get a stent in that one that's 99% blocked and give him better blood flow because his left ventricle is failing because it's not getting... It's not working.
Yeah.
It's not working right. This heart pump is helping. He's going to... But that's what I want to do. I'm like, do it. I mean, it took a few days to get to that. I'm like, do it. Eddie's still hallucinating. They keep giving him this medicine I've asked them not to give him. There's also a thing you get when you're in an ICU. It's a syndrome where you're in the hospital, you're in the bed, you can't get up, and it makes you crazy. You hallucinate, and you can't track time, and you can't. It's so. I said, yes, do that. He said, well, come by in the morning, and then you have to sign the paperwork. Well, after me fussing at them about giving him this Ativan I was standing in the hall talking to that group of doctors about this stent, and yes, please do it and give him the best chance to get his blood sugar under control and quit the nicotine so we can see what we need to do next.
Yeah.
He was having a really bad hallucination. He was, because of all of the equipment he was hooked up to, and because he was out of his head, they had to restrain him, and he'd been restrained for days at this point. He got those loose and tried to climb out of the bed with that pump in him, like halfway out, and he's a very strong man. It was not good. Thankfully, I was right there, and a nurse was there, and we got him back in the bed. He would never hurt anyone. Like, he would never put his hands on anybody to hurt them unless they were threatening his family. Okay.
Yeah.
He was so out of his head. He got a hold of me. I thought he's gonna break my arm. And I never saw that nurse again, and they wouldn't tell me anything. I'm afraid you hurt her. I don't know. And I'm not telling this because I don't want people you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Like, that's why I'm telling this. Like, he would never do that. He would never. That's not at all who he was. He's a very gentle person. And, yeah, he'd get mad and he could be angry, and but he would not hurt. He would not lay his hands on somebody ever. So that's just to show you how out of his head he was with his medication, like,
yeah.
and the whole situation. Like, he didn't understand what was happening. He was terrified. He thought they were going to hurt him because he couldn't understand why he was.
What was going on?
Well, he couldn't understand what was going on at all.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the doctor saw all that. They quit giving him that medication. The next morning, they came in to ask him the questions, like they do. And he could answer the questions. Where are you? Why are you here? Who's the president?
Huh.
What month is it? And he answered the questions correctly. And they said, so we're going to take you down to the cath lab and put a stent in. And he said, no, you're not.
Oh.
And I said, yes, you are. I said, no, I'm not doing that. I said, why? I'm just not doing that. I'm not doing that. No. So he was oriented enough to answer their questions, but he was still in such a fog from everything that he couldn't grasp what was really happening.
Right.
So after he said no then, and they all went away, the doctors and everybody went away, and we talked some more. To have a conversation about it, he was just adamant, no, no, not doing that. So then one of the doctors came in and talked to him, not the surgeon, a different one, and said, well, I mean, you know, we can put you on some medication and see how it goes. I'm like,
yeah, freak out, right?
Okay, great. So we spent Thanksgiving then in the hospital and several more days, and then he had to have a life vest. It's a defibrillator vest you wear before they would release him. Well, the company rep, it was the holidays, I mean,
yeah.
So we couldn't get out. We had to wait for that. And so we eventually made it home. And I tried to, I had so many deals going at work because I had been with my coach and she had coached me through some things, and I had 16 transactions going when we landed in the hospital.
Sheesh.
And I was managing all of that myself. I didn't have a TC or anything like that. And
for those in the wonder, a TC is a transaction coordinator.
Yes.
They help a lot.
They're the magic.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I knew I had, you know, I had work to do. I had people at the office that were totally taking care of those things, trying to manage, you know, can I do this part? Can I, what? So anyway, so we came home to a very different life. He had to wear that life vest 24/7, except for when he was in the shower. He went from oral medications for diabetes to insulin 5 times a day. I had to completely relearn how to cook because they also told us to eliminate all sodium except for a very low amount. And if you look at food, it's practically impossible.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
you need everything raw to be there.
Pretty much. And so I was learning how to cook, and like, there's, thank God for Facebook groups, there's groups that help with that. So I was learning how to make stuff that he would eat. Like, he's never been really picky, honestly. But, and I hadn't been cooking with salt for years because we knew, you know, sodium's bad for you, you need to.
Right.
Right. So, but then when you really get into this, and I can't remember how many milligrams it is, but it's like, I want to say it's 1,500 for a day. And if you look at stuff, that is nothing. That is nothing. Like, that's a tablespoon of ketchup.
Oh, wow.
Like, you have to really...
I don't like salt anyway, so I'm good.
Well, I don't like salt anyway either, but it's in everything. Yeah. Anything that's processed, anything you buy in a can or a bottle, unless it says lower sodium or low sodium, it's crazy how much is in there. Okay, so relearning how to do all that. Well, he's wearing this life vest. He's so tired because his heart's not working right, right?
Yeah, he's not getting the blood flow.
We made it through Christmas, and we'd had more discussions about, you know, his brain started waking up a little bit better, and he had a better understanding of what was happening. You know, your heart's not, you're on
right.
Very limited time frame here if you don't try this stent. So he decided then, I can't remember if he decided before Christmas or after Christmas. Yes, he would try that. Especially we'd been back for follow-up visits. Like, then that's the rest of my week. Besides trying to cook and trying to make sure my real estate business was rolling, I couldn't really leave him home for very long at a time because he was nervous.
Yeah.
Because of everything he'd been through. And so he decided that he would... After meeting with the surgeon and the cardiologist and the heart transplant team and all this stuff, that he would try that stent. So he made the appointment. We made the appointment. I think it was January. January 8th. We went to Indy. First stent procedure, supposed to be there overnight because, you know, he's special because he's had these problems. He's type 2 diabetic. We know we need to keep him overnight. They couldn't get the stent in. His heart started failing more. We're almost at an hour, Tom. I don't know.
Just keep going.
Okay. So this part gets really blurry, but so the whole story is we went in on February 6th.
It's okay.
See,
January,
here we go. January 6th. January 8th. Dang it. January 8th. And he died on February 6th. He never left the hospital. After the stent procedure failed, he was awake for a while. When they brought him back out of that stent procedure, they did have him on a ventilator, which he was real angry about because he didn't want that. And they did end up getting to remove that for a day or two, some
length of time.
Some little length of time,
sure.
Not very long. They were going to, his blood pressure wouldn't stay up. They talked about a different type of heart pump to put in there to see, until they could figure out what to do. He finally pretty much agreed to that. The last thing he said to me was, "Am I dying?" That was in January, like probably the 10th or 11th. I'm not sure of the day. I'd have to go back and...
It's okay.
I'd have to go back and look. Like, I didn't mark those dates in my mind because I...
You don't have to, right?
It's not productive.
I think that's pretty huge. And I think that's a good place for us to say, hey, let's hold off.
Okay.
Why don't you guys come check us out on our next episode when you hear a little bit more of Eddie and Jennifer.